This is Radio Superior 1929, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1920s. This is a true story of our past, so step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is radio station KUWS, broadcasting from Superior, Wisconsin, USA. We wish you a very pleasant good evening. This is Ray Paulson speaking. It's 5 p.m. Central Standard Time, Friday, February 15th, 1929. Lou Martin has the 5 o'clock news report, and we have some advice from Miss Ruthie.
What kind of advice?
Well, she answers the question, which is more fortunate, the wife who is loved or the one who is neglected?
Sounds like a trick question. I hope it isn't embarrassing like the last time.
I don't know why newsmen are so easily embarrassed. The 5 o'clock news report is sponsored by Wisconsin Telephone Company, urging customers to consider getting extension telephones throughout their house. Good evening, Lou.
Good evening, Ray, and good listeners. St. Valentine's Massacre remains unsolved, with suspects still at large. We begin our World Wireless Report from Chicago.
Patrick Kelly, your reporter on the spot here on Chicago's North Side. Prohibition Administrator Major Fred Silloway today advanced the theory that police officers themselves killed seven gangsters herded into a North Side garage yesterday and shot to death. Major Silloway expressed the belief that the killings on St. Valentine's Day are the direct outgrowth of a hijacking job here 6 weeks ago, when 500 cases of whiskey were taken from the Bugs Moran gang by a West Side liquor running outfit. He does not believe the theft of the liquor by one faction from the other could have been carried out in broad daylight on a well-traveled boulevard without police assistance. The Moran gang apparently got the same idea and cut off tribute that the gang paid to police. Major Silloway believes the killings are in retaliation for stopping the protection money. He says some of the killers wore police uniforms and that an automobile resembling a squad car with a gong on the side was used. Chicago Police Captain James Gleason says it's ridiculous to suppose police were involved. He says policemen would never have marched men out of the garage with their hands over their heads unarmed as witnesses described the exit yesterday. Quoting Gleason, those men were gangsters masquerading as officers, unquote. This is your man, Patrick Kelly, in Chicago.
Bertram Frank here. Flash. The tears which Gangland's newest widow shed over the bullet-riddled bodies of their husbands failed utterly to break the code of silence with which gangsters' wives protect their husbands. Police questioned four widows of the St. Valentine's Day massacre, but were greeted only with tears and sneers, and never once an enlightening fact about yesterday's beer war victims. In diamonds and costly furs, their reward for living on the verge of widowhood, the four wives blocked every effort of police questioners to aid in solving the execution. Gangland widows do not depend on police for revenge, and it took only a glance from Mrs. Myrtle Gorman, Mrs. Adam Heyer, and two Mrs. Gusenbergs to learn that they were confident their widowhood would be avenged with bullets and blood. Peter Gusenberg's widow, wearing a $5,000 fur coat and diamonds, told police haughtily that her husband was a real estate dealer. She knew of no enemies nor of any reason why he should be killed. In Chicago, this is Bertram Frank.
This is London calling Webmiller, your correspondent. Question of Germany's dependence for existence on foreign loans since the war aroused a storm of questions from Allied reparations experts today. The German delegation contends that Germany has been living mostly on foreign loans. Dr. Jamer Schott led the discussion for Germany, but he was joined by his colleagues in replying to the crossfire of questions that sought to determine the proportion of the loans which were devoted directly to industrial development. Dr. Schott will conclude the presentation of Germany's case tomorrow. He will sum up the position of Germany with respect to the present and future payments under the Dawes Plan. Various spokesmen insist that Dr. Schott had not made any specific declaration regarding the poverty of the German Treasury because he's planning to present final claims tomorrow, both, as already indicated in the Reichsbank report, and in various public statements preceding the meeting. In London, this is Webb Miller.
This is A.L. Bradford in Washington. A new effort to bring about an agreement between the world powers on further limitation of armament is near. This formal predication was made today by British Ambassador Sir Esme Howard in an exclusive statement to the United Press. The statement of Sir Esme, Dean of the Diplomatic Corps in Washington, is of worldwide importance as it constitutes the first step among the powers to further disarmament. Quoting Ambassador Howard, there would seem to be every reason to believe that now that the 15-cruiser bill has become law, another effort before long will be made to reach an agreement between the principal naval powers of the world for the limitation of naval armaments. The disarmament clause of the League of Nations makes it imperative that all members of the League should make further effort towards the restriction of armament. The United States has hitherto shown itself favorable to the idea of continuing negotiations for an agreement in this sense. It would therefore seem that everything points to an early resumption of negotiations, unquote. In Washington, this is A.L. Bradford, United Press.
Arthur Brisbane here in New York. Flash, Colonel Lindbergh is to marry Miss Anne Morrow, daughter of the American ambassador to Mexico. No marriage could please the American people more. American girls from the Atlantic to the Pacific will now change their plans and select another hero for their dreams. It is pleasing to know that the chain of Lindbergh's ancestry, stretching across the ocean to powerful men of the North, is not to be broken. Flash, if a father, to cure his children of overeating, put arsenic in their food, you would say there's something wrong with that father. When a paternal Federal Reserve Board, mistaking itself for the national government, takes action to cure what it considers over-speculation, then ruins thousands of investors by forcing injurious interest rates, you would say something is wrong with that Federal Reserve Board. Flash, on his 82nd birthday, Thomas Edison said, "We do not know 1/1,000,000% of anything. We do not understand electricity, lights, or sound. We know nothing of these forces or their future effects," unquote. Edison is as modest as Socrates, who, when called wisest of the Greeks, said he supposed they called him that because he knew at least that he knew nothing. Things are not quite as bad as they seem to Mr. Edison. We do not know what electricity is, but we do know how to use it. We know that we do not live as men once thought they lived, with heaven and a threatening God above us, hell and an eager devil below. We know that we are sailing with our sun through one universe, part of a cosmos that includes millions of other universes. We already can look out into space to a distance of more than 1,000,000 light-years, and the new 200-inch telescope is expected to extend man's vision as far as 1,000,000,000 light-years. A race that can weigh the Earth and Sun, united the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, lift steel rails with the mysterious power of the magnet, and produce such a man as Thomas Edison is not to be despised. In New York, this is Arthur Brisbane.
Legislation which Congress might enact in an effort to check stock market speculation will do more harm than good, according to a high government official in the Coolidge administration. The official says that much of the speculation is simply legitimate investment. Meanwhile, the stock market developed a reactionary tone today. Selling pressure was particularly pronounced against the railroad shares of Atchison, Union Pacific, and Canadian Pacific, opening 2 points lower. International Telephone also declined 1 point. The market ran into heavy selling today, particularly with high-priced stocks. Wheat was down at the Duluth Cash Grain Exchange. KUWS Radio News Time is 5:08. Ray Paulson has this message from Wisconsin Telephone.
And it's a good message, Lou. Extension telephones. Boy, they can save you miles of wearying steps, falling down the steps, or falling up. Just when you are upstairs or another part of the house, the telephone may ring. It is necessary to answer at once, for someone may be calling you about a matter of social or business importance. Telephone extensions are the convenient means of bringing the telephone near wherever you are. Not only that, extensions properly located throughout your home avoid the embarrassment of making or answering telephone calls while others are present. An extension by the bedside is an instant aid and protection in all cases of emergency. Ask our business office to consult with you as to the ideal equipment for your home. There's a world of telephone comfort to be had for very little cost. Extension telephones, with all their protection and convenience, why, they cost only a few cents a day. Get your extension phones now. Lou?
Three youths and a girl were arrested today at Carpenter School for passing out communist literature against the Boy Scouts. Evening Telegram newsman J.H. Somerville has that story.
Superior City police officers today swooped down on the Carpenter School grounds after receiving a tip from the principal and arrested four members of the Young People's Communist League of America. They were distributing pamphlets against the Boy Scouts of America movement. Arraigned in municipal court before Judge F.S. Parker, the four gave their names as Miss Timey Sabila, 18, Sam Reed, 22, William Hill, 21, and Eric Cantola, 20. Reed says he devotes his time to organizing the league in this district. They pleaded not guilty before Judge Parker to handing to persons on a street or public place in the city of Superior bills, posters, advertisements, or Dodgers without license. Bail is set at $10 each and was furnished by the International Labor Defense, an organization which aids political prisoners and workers. Their arrests are from a complaint made late yesterday by Carpenter Principal A.T. Hornaday that such literature branding the Boy Scouts as, quote, an organization for capitalist wars was being circulated by several children. Police Chief Arthur Buchanan and Assistant Chief W.A. Meade received a call today that the communists had resumed their operations. Police drove at a fast speed to the school, where they arrested the four giving out pamphlets to grade school children. The four belonged to the pioneer organization of the District Communist League. The Young Workers Communistic League includes more than 100 units in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota, and has more than 2,000 members, according to Mr. Reed. He stated that he receives no pay for the work, merely a sum for his expenses. Reed says the distribution of literature concerning the Boy Scouts by the Young Workers League is not an illegal act. The Pioneers of America, which is a member of the Young Workers Communist League, reserves the right to distribute working class literature in the streets and among the working class, including school children. The Young Workers Communist League claims that they will continue to counteract militaristic propaganda of the Boy Scouts. We today will distribute a second leaflet to school children protesting against the actions of the school principal trying to prevent children from reading it. Mr. Reed continued to say the action of the city authorities in their joint attack on the Young Workers Communistic League proves that the schools and the city authorities are the agents and servants of big business. The Boy Scouts and the school have in the past and are still used as a means to poison the working class and children to advance their position in capitalistic society. Unquote. Lou?
Reporter J.H. Somerville with the Evening Telegram. Wisconsin legislators drink, according to some of their colleagues. Capitol reporter Arthur Bystrom has more.
Indirect statements by two legislators said their contemporaries drink illicit liquor. Senator Ben Gettleman of Milwaukee fired back that the Ku Klux Klan and Anti-Saloon League are bedfellows. Senator Thomas Duncan's resolution for a referendum in April would legalize 2.75% beer and is being recommended for passage by the Assembly Committee on Elections. Senator Howard Teasdale's bill to make it a criminal offense to purchase illegal liquor brought the charge that most or some of the members of the legislature drink. Assemblyman J.A. Parker of Antigo says if the law is passed, quote, you would have to elect a new legislature because most of the members would be arrested, unquote. Appearing before the Senate Elections Committee in opposition to the Duncan referendum, M.M. Shirk was charged by committee members with being active in behalf of a secret hooded order in Madison.
The Superior City Council met with head of the Lakes Airways officials yesterday, favoring the construction of an airplane hangar at the municipal airport at a cost of $18,000. The work will be done under the direction of the city engineer, E.B. Banks. The improvements include the removal of wires on Belknap Street, which would assure safe landings and takeoffs at the Billings Park Field. The hangar replaces the present wooden hangar, which has served for the past 2 years to house the planes. Captain A.W. Glaza is the new officer in charge of the Coast Guard station in Duluth. Captain Glaza was transferred here from Kewaunee Point in Michigan. Said to be one of the bravest and most successful guardsmen of the Great Lakes, he has figured in the rescue of 139 seamen in 14 Great Lake wrecks during his 19 years of service. He is now 38 years old.
Lots of lessons from today's news, Lou. Learned a lot.
That's refreshing. I never get that from Jack. What did you learn?
Well, we learned that mobster wives are pretty scary, almost as scary as the stock market, that Thomas Edison doesn't really understand electricity after all, and that you shouldn't hang out with bad company, like state legislators.
Hey, you get an A, Ray.
Well, the forecast from the U.S. Weather Bureau for this Friday, February 15th, 1929. Snow flurries tonight and tomorrow, and a bit cooler, with a low tonight of 5 degrees. That's above. The turntable is warmed up, and we're going to warm your soul with this rendition of Down by the Riverside by Bunk Johnson and the Yerba Buena Jazz Band on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Down, God knows it's down by the riverside. Gonna lay my whipping down. Ain't gonna study one no more. I 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 ain't gonna study one no more. Down by the riverside, I'm gonna meet my mother dad. Down by the riverside, I'm gonna meet my sister dad. God knows it's down by the riverside, I'm gonna meet my brother dad. We ain't gonna study one no more. We ain't gonna study one no more. We ain't gonna study one no more. Ain't gonna study one no more. Yeah, ain't gonna study one or more. Ain't gonna study one or more. Ain't gonna study one or more.
That's Down by the Riverside with Bunk Johnson and the Yerba Buena Jazz Band on station KUWS. Hey, Ross Brothers in Superior is having a great rummage sale tomorrow. It's in the men's and boys section, and you know there's no bad stuff at Ross Brothers. This is all good merchandise, odd sizes, large sizes, and things that you can wear and use right now. A great end-of-the-season cleanup of small lots, odds and ends, etc. Like this. Boys, all wool pants, large sizes, get this, 95 cents. Boys, $12 to $14, two knicker suits, sizes 13 to 16, $5.95. Hey, men's $5 bathrobes, $1.95. Men's 750 sweaters, crickets and coats, $2.95. And you need a belt? We don't want your pants falling down. Men's and boys, 65-cent belts, 35 cents. How can you beat that? Roth Brothers in Superior. Here's Duke Ellington and his orchestra from 1928 and Hot and Bothered, with vocals by Baby Cox and Johnny Hodges on the clarinet, on the Martin and McKenna Show. We'll be right back. Duke Ellington and Hot and Bothered on KUWS.
Hello, you are Jacques McKenna, that radio man?
Nah, I'm better looking than he is. And you are?
Dr. M.G. Hindus, leading authority on post-revolutionary Russia. Principal Wade sent me from Central High School. You see, Mr. Better Looking and Us, I was today's lecturer.
Seeing as how you don't have a gun or a sharp stick, you're welcome to come in. So you don't sound Scandinavian.
An American joke, yes? I am Siberian-born, educated at Harvard, and have followed firsthand the rise of Bolshevism and the fall of the Romanov dynasty. Now, Mr. Looking Ears, you may think to yourself, this is not interesting. I wish Dr. Hindus would leave now so I can play my decadent American music and continue to auction off material goods for the profits of capitalists.
Oh, you read my mind, word for word.
Ha ha! I know your American sense of hilarity, and I enjoy it too, although puzzling at times. But my lecture is not uninteresting. Did you know, for instance, that in Russia today, among the peasant class, that it is highly unusual that a maiden will reach her 18th birthday without betrothal? And if she is still not married by age 23, she is considered old maid. Interesting, da?
I must remember to send Principal Wade a thank you note.
But there is the intensely serious side to this upheaval. Bolshevism in Russia has meant the confiscation and ownership of everything by the government. They say the government is the people, but don't you believe it. But this condition will change, mister. Peasants will ultimately rule Russia. The peasants are anarchists at heart and are willing to fight anyone who attempts to deprive them of their free land. The poor people are ignorant, but that does not mean they are stupid to put up with these Bolsheviks and all of their isms like communism and collectivism. Most alarming to me is very true that a spirit of atheism exists. In schools, where they are available, the pupils' minds are saturated with atheism.
Dr. M.G. Hindus, leading authority on post-revolutionary Russia. Thank you, sir. I must return to the playing of the decadent music now.
Yes, I understand. If it is allowable, I'd enjoy staying and watching a real radio announcing man conduct his profession. That is, if it is allowable.
Absolutely. Here's one full of decay by Firehouse 5 Plus 2. Yes, sir, that's my baby on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Thank you.
Firehouse 5, plus 2, and yes, sir, that's my baby.
Interesting guest you had on. Someone with some real newsy content. How come I can't interview him? Why do I have to interview someone about, you know, personal things?
You're trying to say a love life?
No, I have no desire to say those words.
You're on, sport.
Let me introduce Miss Ruth Millett for a minute with Mr. Ruthie.
Usually the longest minute of the day.
Ever the gentleman, Mr. Paulson. And Mr. Martin, you are the most squeamish thing I've ever known. A lot like my grandmother. Men need to be able to better express themselves and say the word love right out loud.
I agree, Ruthie. Most men can say hate and fight and do all of those things, but they can't say the word, love.
It's crippling our nation. It's as important a topic as we can address, yet men don't want to talk about it.
Oh, those men.
Emotional cripples, I say.
What they need is a good cry. When was the last time you had a good cry, Lou?
Cute. Miss Ruthie is here to read a couple of letters and give advice to those people. I didn't and won't be writing any, so I say let's get on with it.
Gladly. This is from two of those emotional cripples to whom I referred to earlier, Mr. A.C. and Mr. J.D. Dear Miss Ruthie, we are two college men, 21 and 22 years old, who are madly in love with two girls of high social standing and wealth.
The girls must not be from around here.
These girls love us, and we wish to marry immediately because we fear a trick of fate may separate us before graduation. A number of our fraternity brothers are happily married and have advised us to elope. Would you advise the double marriage? Signed A.C. and J.D., Superior State Teachers College. Well, it seems to me, A.C. and J.D., that the proper persons to consult are your parents, inasmuch as they will have to support you and your wife if you get married while you are still in college.
Whoa, whoa.
My guess is she's just getting started.
I often wonder at the callousness and selfishness of young men who rush into matrimony to gratify their own desires and then leave their parents to pay the bill for their folly.
Kids nowadays.
Against their parents' advice, girls marry lazy loafers and drunken ne'er-do-wells, and in a few years come back home with a baby or two for mother and father to take care of.
I am shocked. I did not realize this degree of decadence existed in America. We did not have this scurrilous activity at Harvard, as is the case apparently at Superior State.
That's why Miss Ruthie is always popular on the radio.
I don't think that includes college men anymore.
The second letter is from KB of Ashland. Dear Miss Ruthie, my wife and I would like your opinion. Which is the most fortunate, the wife who is loved or the one who is neglected? I never refuse my wife anything, and she says I love her too much. Is there such a thing as being too good to your wife?
This is nonsensical.
The guy's got problems.
The running commentary is not necessary, fellas. Dear Mr. KB, there are two schools of thought in dealing with women. One holds to the theory that the way to hold a woman is with tenderness and kindness.
That's the only way.
Wait, Lou. Remember, this is our tough love, Miss Ruthie.
The other contends that the way to make a woman eat out of your hand is to treat her rough.
This is becoming very disturbing. Very.
Evidently, your wife belongs to the latter class. You might have to pep up her interest in you by giving her a lesson in wrestling now and then. However, most women respond to kindness, and the more their husbands love them, the happier they are. Provided, of course, the men don't let themselves be run over. No woman ever loves a man she henpecks. And that is A Minute with Miss Ruthie.
Loved your advice, Miss Ruthie. See, I can say that word.
Time for more decadence. Here's Bunk Johnson and his New Orleans band with When the Saints Go Marching In on the Martin and McKenna Wrestling Show.
Thank you.
Bunk Johnson and his New Orleans band with When the Saints Go Marching In. Well, Mr. Hindus, what do you think?
Radio can be such a helpful, useful tool.
Thank you.
Or it can be a hideous purveyor of propaganda with questionable advice and questionable entertainment.
So, what do you think of our movies?
Even more questionable, but strangely alluring.
Mother McCree, with Victor McLaughlin, is playing at the Capitol. It's the home of the new Wurlitzer pipe organ, and costs just 25 cents to get in.
Or there's the old talking picture playing at the Palace, Lonesome with Glenn Tryon.
Mr. Martin, I'm surprised. That's a romantic comedy.
I like it because of the new technology. These talkies are something.
Well, that's it, folks. We got Lou to say love and everything tonight. Stay tuned for the Bob White Melody Makers, the Hudson Essex Challengers, and Amos and Andy. We'll be back, same time, same place on your radio dial, the good Lord willing, and Lou doesn't get too in touch with his feelings. For Lou, Mr. Hindus.
It was a real eye-opener. Siberia is nothing like this.
And Miss Ruthie, I'm Ray Paulson. Good night.
I like talkies. That's why I think we should all venture to the Orpheum in Duluth. They've got a live show called Gay Paris with an entourage of 163. It's pricey, though. It costs between $1 and $3 for seats.
I don't like talkies that much.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1929, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by John Munson, John Munsell, Kathy Bergren, Bruce McDonald, Kent Vogel, and Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1929 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.
We have a prologue to the St. Valentine's Massacre.
On the morning of February 14, 1929, six members of the Bugs Moran gang and a doctor were lined up against the inside wall of the SMC Cartage Garage of Chicago's North Side. They were shot and killed by men, possibly Al Capone's gang, possibly outside talent.
The St. Valentine's Massacre failed to get its target, Northside gang leader Bugs Moran. An unintended victim was mechanic John May, who was working in the garage.
The Moran gang thought their executioners were police, so they did not resist, thinking that this was likely a show bust merely to garner good press for the Chicago Police Department.
The slaughter was the worst gang violence in the nation's history, and ignited public outrage and crippled both the Moran and Capone gangs.
In 1931, Capone was convicted of income tax evasion and imprisoned for 11 years. He left mentally incompetent from syphilis and died in 1947 at the age of 48.
Bugs Moran would live until 1957, spending time in and out of prison. He died in Leavenworth Federal Penitentiary at 66 years old. The former flamboyant mobster was estimated to be worth about $100 at the time of his death, and he received a pauper's burial at the prison cemetery.